We're listening to the amazing vocalizations of Bobby McFerrin performing with the North German Radio Jazz Ensemble. Fred Sturm conducting. It is my pleasure to welcome Fred Sturm into our studios. He's the director of jazz and improvisational music at the Lawrence University Conservatory of Music in Appleton, Wisconsin. Also a acclaimed jazz composer and arranger. He's performed all parts of the world, also an author, and welcome to KRWG.
It's wonderful to be here.
So, Fred Sturm, before we talk about Migrations, which we just heard a little bit of and is going to be performed here, you have called yourself a musical mutt, and I was reading that your father was a cellist in the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, your mother was a singer, so you had some very interesting classical early influences, but others too. Tell us about what that means to you.
Well, thanks for doing your homework. I appreciate that. Yeah, there were, like a lot of kids that were brought up in the 50s and the 60s, I was like 12 or 13 when the Beatles came in from England, so there was a lot of those influences, which, of course, my classical mother and father didn't want me to have anything to do with. The early forms of rhythm and blues and things that we were getting into, I loved James Brown and Blood, Sweat, and Tears, but at home, we were listening to Respighi and Bach and whatever else, so it was a real kind of an eclectic mix of things that were going on that made life so interesting there in our household. And as the years went by, those all became part of my musical history that fed the stream,
And we heard a little bit earlier before you came in, music performed by Charles Schluter, one of your teachers.
Right.
Performing his teacher, Vincent Persichetti. Actually, I did this musical lineage thing. So just tell us a little bit about your early performing career. Then we're going to talk about composing and arranging.
Sure. Mom and Dad wanted me desperately to play either cello, violin, piano, or something like that. And of course, I didn't want anything to do with any of it. So I waited until I was about ninth grade and went to a concert of the Milwaukee Symphony where Charles Schluter, who was his first job out of the Juilliard, and I heard a performance, and I just thought it was amazing. And I said to my dad, "I want to take lessons with that guy." And a week or two later, I had a lesson with Charles, and I was able to study with him for 2 years, which was really a thrill.
Wow! To start off, so you're starting at the top—that's pretty. That's pretty great.
Yeah.
So you are a composer and an arranger, and another thing I read, I just want you to talk a little bit about the difference between those and your approach to them, because it sounds like you have an interesting approach to your, you really blur the lines between composing and arranging.
That's the line that I always use, is that I just feel like, when you're working with somebody else's material, you approach it almost like a composer. You take it, you dissect it, you pull it apart almost like you would your own cells and motives and ideas that you work with when you're with your own materials. And so, whether I'm working with something of mine that I've created or that somebody else has created, I take pretty much the same approach toward it. And a lot of us are using a phrase now called recomposition, which is where you take something and completely transform it into something else. And that gives you a little bit more artistic license.
Uh-huh. Well, and that's actually very, composers have been doing that all through musical history. We have lists, quote-unquote, paraphrases of or of opera tunes, and people, there. I guess it's a fine line between borrowing and paying homage and plagiarism, but if you call it recomposition, you could somehow make it happen.
It can be all-out stealing at times, that's right.
Yeah, but that's a way of so if you state who you're stealing from, then it's a way of paying homage.
You betcha.
All right? Imitation is the highest form of flattery, and I suppose stealing is too. Yeah. All right, so let's talk a little bit about this piece, Migrations. We just heard a few minutes of it, and we heard several minutes of Bobby McFerrin, who's just so unique in what he does with his voice. And as I understand it, I was listening to some of it. It's on YouTube, about 30 minutes long, and you have borrowed, stolen, whatever, music from many traditions from all around the world. Tell us about Migrations and also what's going to be happening here at NMSU with Migrations.
Well, I was commissioned to do a project for the Norddeutscher Rundfunk in Hamburg, and they said you can do whatever it is that you want to do. And at that particular time, I was studying a lot of different indigenous musics, and a good friend of mine who is an ethnomusicologist said, well, I've got thousands of recordings, some things that you might be interested in listening to. So my original plan was to do kind of a circle around the globe, you know, capture as many different indigenous folk musics from around the world. And we whittled that down from about 2,000 recordings down to about 24, 25. And then I went to the folks in Hamburg and I said, I'd really love to do this project, but I'd really like to do it with Bobby McFerrin. And they went for the idea right away. So over the course of those next few months that followed, I would send to Bobby digital versions of these things for him to be able to study and listen to and approve. He just approved everything. You know, it's like
digital versions of the ethnographic folk melodies or things that you had already written?
Actually, I had both. I would send him the folk or field recordings when they were pertinent, and then whatever I had transformed them into. So in some instances, it might only be 4, 5, or 6 measures long, the original, and then I would show to him, you know, what I had done with it, with a big, question mark, what do you think of this, you know? And so we went like that probably for about 6 or 7 months, and the next thing you know, we were over there in Germany putting it all together. So it ended up being about 23 different pieces. Some of them I used almost verbatim, and then some of the others I completely transformed, you know, so it was kind of a mixture of composition and arrangement and recomposition.
Huh. Now, how did you choose from those 2,000 field recordings, 23 or 24, and also what are some of the indigenous groups that are represented?
Yeah, that's a great question. Initially, we wanted it to be materials that had some sort of an improvisational basis to them. And then a lot of it was just whimsy. It was based upon, well, that appeals to me, or I think that's something that I could develop. One of the things that was a real challenge in this project is so many of these forms of indigenous music are very, very short forms of melody. So if you're going to develop them into a 5 or 6 minute jazz piece, it's going to take a lot of fancy dancing, you know. So I worked with it that way. And then I was also conscious of trying to get as much of a mix from around the planet as I could. And that was not only for the project, but for myself. I wanted to learn a lot about these different forms of music. So we had some things from, I initially wanted it to be, you know, something that would represent maybe every time zone or something from a different part of the planet. But we ended up with things from South America and from Africa, from Europe. We had some things from Mongolia. And it ended up being just such a wonderful, eclectic mix. And then we made the program flow according to the way that we thought the music would, you know, sequence best.
Oh, so I have to ask, do you have Mongolian throat singing?
No.
Yes. Oh, okay.
I didn't go that far because Bobby doesn't throat sing.
Yeah.
Nor could I find a way to make a jazz ensemble sound like they were doing, you know, throat singing. But there was a really, in that particular case, there was a folk singer who strolled across the country in Mongolia, and he had this beautiful theme of his that just knocked on my door and didn't go away. And so I ended up turning, I just used a small portion of that and developed that into an entire composition.
We've got Pancho Romero in the studio, too. I'm going to ask Pancho to come to his mic because you're here this week in a jazz residency at New Mexico State. And tomorrow night, this Migrations is going to be performed. Is that right, Pancho?
Absolutely,
yes. So tell us a little bit about, because we don't have Bobby McFerrin here, so just tell us about the concert tomorrow night.
Well, we've taken these vocal melodies that Fred has written for Bobby, and we've replaced them with other instruments. We have Alan Kaplan playing, Jim Shear, Lisa Van Winkle, Roberta Arruda, and I think we have a really good mix of, Fred Bugbee also is included in this, a good mix of faculty involvement and student involvement. The students are so excited about this project, and Fred's been with us for the last couple of days, and they're playing really well.
So Fred Sturm, let's talk a little bit about your teaching career, because if you feel like somebody who is very dedicated to teaching, and I say that because, first of all, if you look at Migrations or several of your works that are on YouTube, the score is there, which is just a fantastic teaching tool for anybody who knows how to read music, follow along with it. And you also have online a whole composing clinic. So somebody can just go to your website and learn about composing right there. They don't have to come find you to do it at a residency, but you've really made your work very available. So tell us a little bit about your philosophy of teaching. And I should say that you also taught at the Eastman School of Music for 11 or so years, and now you're at Lawrence University, which is a fantastic conservatory as well. So Something about your teaching career.
Yeah, it's 37 years I've been teaching at the university level, and I knew as a young man that I wanted to be a teacher. And these other opportunities, you know, composing, arranging, conducting, and whatever, just kind of came alongside those. And I think I've always maintained that priority of teaching and the other things that have been just kind of an added gift that go with it. But yeah, I've just had a wonderful experience putting all those things together.
You've also composed a lot for high school and middle school bands. Are those jazz bands or also symphonic bands?
Well, actually, it's been bands and choirs and chamber ensembles.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of that was driven by my two children had a wonderful band director that, you know, he and I would chat every once in a while, and we would complain about the repertoire was out there. And one day he said, "Why don't you put your money where your mouth is and create some things for us?" And right about that time, there was a publishing company that was interested in getting me involved, and they said, "If we take your high end things and your educational things, can we just kind of make a whole collection of your stuff?" And it ended up being a real, real eye opener for me. It was fun, and it's been something that I've really enjoyed doing as kind of a mix in with my real high-end projects to kind of go from one to the other.
Uh-huh. We've got a couple minutes left. I just want to talk about improvisation, because Bobby McFerrin, who is so committed to improvisation, and I've seen him work with classical musicians who are, you know, students who are just terrified to improvise, and he just shakes them up, makes them do it. Of course, it's very common in the jazz world, but tell us a little bit about your approach to teaching improvisation, since that's one of the main things that you're doing.
Sure. Well, we're actually working with everybody from just young middle school students, elementary students. Actually, I run a fantasy camp for adults, for amateur adults, where we're teaching 80 and 85-year-olds improvisation as well. So there's pretty much the same approach that you take toward all of that. But a really good example of what we did with Bobby was that when the project was assembled, we brought him over to Germany. We hadn't rehearsed any of these materials, and each time we performed them, he performed them completely differently, because everything was approached from a totally improvisational basis. So it was a great way for me to be able to watch a master taking material that I was intimately familiar with and see what he would do with all of it. So, you know, to be able to work all that into the mix and share that with Poncho's students here has really been a fun part of the process.
I really wish we had a lot more time to talk. We'll have to do it another time. Thank you. Fred Sturm has been my guest this afternoon, and Poncho Romero as well, director of jazz ensemble here at NMSU, and Fred Sturm, director of jazz and improvisational music at Lawrence University Conservatory in Appleton, Wisconsin. Thanks again for coming in.
Thanks, Leora.